Every community has a place where people meet and stories are told. The East Coast has stoops, the South has porches, and in Alaska, we have Arctic entries.
Here, Alaskans share their personal stories, funny, sad, and sweet. These stories are originally told at our monthly storytelling event in Anchorage. At each live performance, seven people tell a seven-minute-long true story related to the show's theme.
I'm Jason Brandeis.
And I'm Rosie Robards.
Welcome to Arctic Entries on KSKA Anchorage.
During this hour, we'll hear stories about handsy ghosts, mystery illnesses, and being afraid for your life.
Spooky.
After all, the theme of this show is spooked. Campfire stories, local legends, and costumes gone amok.
Some of the storytellers decided to keep it light.
And I learned that night that it's actually really difficult to drive stick shift when you're dressed as an oak tree.
And others were more serious.
And I didn't know that I had dislocated all five ribs and twisted a couple vertebrae and didn't have much strength in that arm. So finally, I get low on my knees.
All these stories were originally told in October 2011 at the Snow Goose Theater in Anchorage as part of our live event the second Tuesday of each month.
Our first story is from Dan Olson. Dan is something of a snowbird. He spends his summers as a tour boat captain in Seward, and visits Antarctica during the winter.
Sounds like he's trying to stay warmer than the rest of us. Here's Dan Olson.
I'm Dan. I'm a tour boat captain down in Seward, but in the wintertime I often have started my own migration about 4 years ago down to Antarctica to check things out on that side of the planet. And Matt did steal my thunder. He's been egging me to do an Arctic entry for a long time, and when I found out that the topic was spooked, I begged to have an Antarctic entry because I could think of no more spooky moment in my life than was provided me by a leopard seal in Antarctica. And can I just see how many people have seen photos, videos, or real-life leopard seals? All right, that's a little bit of an indication. Because if you haven't, a leopard seal, if you have just a seal, what, this guy was spooked by a seal? Leopard seals are 1,300 pounds. About 13 feet long, or if you're one of those crazy people in the audience who wants to go with the rest of the scientific community and the world and do the metric thing, they're about 3 meters and about 500 kilograms. And when a harbor seal looks at you, you've probably been kayaking out in the Sound when you've seen a harbor seal look at you with those puppy dog eyes, and they look curious and cute, almost like they want to be pet. When a leopard seal looks at you, a leopard seal has a reptilian head about this long, about this tall, and has a long grin about this long, as if to say, I just might eat you right now. And although there's been no documented cases of a leopard seal eating a human, there has been documented cases of leopard seals killing humans. And if you're familiar with the Shackleton story, the Endurance, Thomas Ord Lees was spooked by a leopard seal and went running across the ice the other direction. Apparently it went underneath, swam underneath and watched his shadow on the ice and popped up in front of him by surprise and nearly got him until Frank Wilde had a rifle right there on hand, and he had quite a nice encounter. If you've seen Paul Nicklin's videos and photographs, they keep on bringing these penguins to photographers and scuba divers sometimes as if they think we're a totally useless predator on our own and we need to be taught how to eat penguins. They just push them up towards the camera, but they will also mouth the cameras. Leopard seals like to mouth things to test them, and I've seen them mouth our kayaks before. Again, there's a 1,300-pound animal in the water, and we've seen them pop our zodiacs down in Antarctica and things like that. So they're pretty intimidating. Well, I had clients out on kayaking, and we've had much training about calving icebergs and the waves they produce and calving glaciers and how far to be away from them so you don't get shards of ice blown at you at about 100 miles an hour and things like that. But they don't have much in the handbook, the manual, about how to deal with a 1,300-pound seal that grins and says, I could eat you if I feel like it. So we're paddling along one day. I have 10 clients in 5 doubles, and I'm in a single, and there's somebody says, what is that over there? Is that a seal? And we all look. Oh, yeah. And I said, I think it's a leopard seal. And I hadn't heard enough of the bad stories, just some of the curious stories. And So we're watching it for a while, and somebody says, I think it's got something. And sure enough, there's a penguin flying through the air. And we took some pictures, and we checked it out, and we could see that the penguin's head was only attached to the rest of its body by a small little bit of skin. And leopard seals will do that. They'll bite all the way around the neck to separate all the skin, and then they grab the rest of the skin and shake like mad until the penguin literally gets ripped out of its own skin. And we watched this. And then it proceeded to eat the penguin. And that kind of display of a predator eating something usually happens in a zoo behind bars, and you don't really have it right in front of you. Well, then it finished, and it swam over to us, which at this point was still fascinating and interesting. And for me, it was. For some of my kayakers had quite a firm grip on their paddle at that point. And it started charging at us and diving straight down. And I don't know about you guys, but every time there's a very large something underwater, everybody's looking to see where it is. And it would come shooting up and straight out, and it would like glance just a couple inches from our kayaks, shooting back and forth. And the other kayakers, at that point, the guide mentality kicks in, and I say, you guys might all want to raft up together. which they were very quick to do. And I, you know, the other piece of guide mentality is like, take care of your clients and you'll be fine, you know? So I'm kind of drifting out on my own, and we're this leopard seal zipping it towards us, zipping back and forth. And all of a sudden it zips straight down from us and we don't really see where it goes. And quite a bit of time passes by and we're all quite curious where it's going. And all of a sudden I feel and hear at the same time, boom! On the bottom of my kayak, I nearly capsized. And the leopard seal had hit the bottom of my kayak alone so hard that it like jumped me up a little bit, but thankfully I did not capsize. And it became quickly a good time to raft up with the other kayaks. And my interest and intrigue quickly turned into a slight bit of nervousness. Well, what had happened was that the wind had drifted us towards this one iceberg. Leopard seals, also known as sea leopards, leopard seals love icebergs. They love to hang out near icebergs. And I think that they sometimes can see penguins swimming between them and icebergs. They can hide behind them. And they often rest near them. And it's just a good place for them to hang out. And we had drifted into his or her. It was a big one, so it was probably a her. Female sea leopard seals are quite large. And we had drifted near her iceberg. And she didn't like that very much. So she was charging us to get us to clear out of her territory. And normally I'm not a proud person. I can admit defeat, but I am pretty fairly self-sufficient. So it did take just a little bit of wisdom over my self-sufficiency to then call on the radio to our safety Zodiac and say, you know what, can you just tow us out of here?
That was Dan Olson of Anchorage, and you're listening to Arctic Entries.
Our next storyteller is Becky Wint. Becky takes us on a Halloween costume odyssey, recounting the ways in which she has kept Halloween nice and dorky.
Hey, one person's dorky is another person's genius. Let's let the listeners decide. This is Becky Wint telling her story while dressed as a cheeseburger.
It's probably obvious, but I'm not going to tell a scary story. My name is Becky Wint, and I am an enormous Halloween costume dork. I always have been. When I was a child, my friends would come over dressed for Halloween as like a ballerina or a fairy princess or like Glinda the Good Witch from The Wizard of Oz, and I would be dressed as like Susan B. Anthony or an insect or Groucho Marx. Over time, this affliction has not gotten any better. In fact, I think it's actually gotten worse. Since college, I feel like every woman that I've known has seen Halloween as an opportunity to turn like her favorite profession or her favorite farm animal or her favorite like branch of the civil service into some kind of like Halloween bikini that she can then wear for the holiday. And which I'm sure there are many of you who are Halloween bikini costume wearers and bikini costume enthusiasts alike, and that's great. But I've always sort of felt like it was an affront to my feminist principles to wear a Halloween bikini. Also just seemed like kind of a shame when I could otherwise be wearing something so delightfully dorky. And it's also rather cold in Alaska on Halloween, so it's not a really good practice for that reason. And so every year, in a sea of, you know, pornographic rodents and, like, sexy construction workers and, like, you know, foxy postal service delivery people, I am, like, the giant stuffed cheeseburger. In law school, I once notoriously got into a slow-motion car accident on Halloween. I wasn't drinking. I was actually the designated driver for two of my friends. One of them was dressed as sexy gladiator, complete with like breastplate. And one of them was dressed as sexy popcorn with like a red and white striped miniskirt and a kernel encrusted bustier. And I was wearing a floor length bark covered tube and had tree branches duct taped to my arms. And I learned that night that it's actually really difficult to drive stick shift when you're dressed as an oak tree. But by far the height of my costuming ridiculousness has been the years when I've thought it was a good idea to use my Halloween costume as a vehicle for my political ideals, as a left-wing political ideals. So in 2002, I actually went to a politically themed Halloween party, and I thought, this is going to be excellent. Like, I'm going to come up with some really clever costume. Everyone's going to get it. I'm totally going to dominate this party. And so I decided to go to the party with my friends Karen and Andy, and I went to pick them up beforehand, knocked on the door, and they're, of course, dressed as John Kennedy and Marilyn Monroe. So she's got, you know, he has this like great dapper suit on, and she has this like really stunning low-cut dress and perfect hair and like mole. She's looking really awesome. And she looks at me, and I'm basically wearing like a floor-length green burqa and handcuffs. And she says to me, like the mother of small children that she is, she says, "Why don't you tell me something about your costume?" I should have known then. And so I kind of like point at the crown that I'm wearing and try to hold up the torch that I'm carrying, which is sort of difficult because I'm wearing handcuffs. And I say, "I'm clearly the USA Patriot Act. I'm liberty in chains." Needless to say, not that many people got that costume at that party. But undeterred, in 2003, I was actually working in politics. I was working for Howard Dean. And so I was like, great, it's going to be another year for a great political costume. And I decided that I was going to dress as the Mexico City policy. So who knows what the Mexico City policy is? Yeah, no one. I should have done that survey before deciding that this was a good idea. So the Mexico City policy, otherwise known as the global gag rule, it's an intermittent U.S. foreign policy. It was enacted by Reagan. It was rescinded by President Clinton. It was then reenacted by President George W. Bush and rescinded again by Obama. And what it basically does is it prevents international health organizations receiving USAID funding from telling women who seek their services that abortion is an option if they're pregnant. So it doesn't just prevent like the provision of abortion services, it also prevented people from, you know, actually just knowing that abortion was an option. So as a 23-year-old like left-wing political organizer, I thought about this a lot. And I was really upset about it, and of course to me it screamed, perfect, ideal Halloween costume. So I'm getting ready that year, and I'm getting ready with my roommate, and she's putting on like glitter eye makeup and this like, you know, full body black leather outfit that's like low cut in the front, and she's going as like sexy Hell's Angel or something like that. And I'm making this giant sign that says choice that I'm gonna wrap around my midsection, and then I have this gag. So I get all dressed and I'm like, this is great. Everyone's gonna get this. It's gonna be awesome this year. And I go to the party and knock on the door again, and the hosts come to the door and they're like, hey! And I'm like, because it's kind of difficult to emote when you're wearing a gag. And so my boyfriend at the time goes to get me a beer, and he brings it back, and it's like really hard to drink out of a plastic cup when you're wearing a gag. So he kind of valiantly goes and forages for a straw for me. And comes back, and I stick my little straw under my gag, and he kind of doesn't know what to do to me and, like, abandons me to go dance with, like, sexy Monica Lewinsky and, like, foxy Hillary Clinton and, like, slutty congressional intern. And so I kind of try to mill around, but, again, it's hard to make small talk when you're wearing a gag. So for a while, I just put my gag up on my forehead, you know, but then I'm just, like, choice in a headband, which is not the kind of utter costume domination I had envisioned for myself. And so, you know, I recommit to my ideals and put my gag back on and just kind of chill out on the couch for most of the evening. But at, like, 2 a.m, this woman comes out of the crowd and she kind of, like, parts the party fog, and she looks at me and she's like, "Oh my God, you are the Mexico City policy." And I was like, yes, I am. I'm brilliant. And that was the moment that I would just wait for. You know, I think no matter what kind of ridiculous costume I wear every year, there's always someone who thinks it's brilliant. And that is just it for me. This year, I think I'm going to go as the Trans-Alaska Pipeline System. I told a friend of mine that I was thinking of going as Taps, and he was like, "You mean, like, sexy Taps?" And I was like, "No, definitely not sexy." That's it. Happy Halloween, everyone.
That was Becky Wint. Look out for her this Halloween, when she will be dressing as Occam's Razor.
Oh, goodness. Now who's the dork?
Touché, Rosie. Touché. You're listening to Arctic Entries. I'm Jason Brandeis.
And I'm Rosie Robards. So, anyone may volunteer to tell a story at our live Arctic Entries events. For more on that, visit arcticentries.com. The theme of today's show is Spooked: campfire stories, local legends, and costumes gone amok.
Our next storyteller turns a prank on its head while teaching a lesson in a very unlikely fashion. Take it away, Helen Sepereau.
Wow, I really can't see you. Now for something completely different. This story starts with a pair of black fishnet stockings that I received as a gift at a fall church retreat. From 2 men, both of them married. During that season of my life, I was a pastor's wife, and they certainly saw me perhaps as someone who was easy, naive, because when they gave me the gift, they were both snickering and sniggering. And I gamely smiled as I opened the gift and I saw the fishnet stockings. But inside I said, "Beware of short blonde women." Particularly when they're pastors' wives who think that they're being played for a fool. The following week, my friend Sharon, who also was my house cleaner and belonged to the same church, came over to my house and I brought her up to my bedroom. I unwrapped the black fishnet stockings and I laid them out on the bed. And she said, "So where did you get those?" And I said, "From Mark and Michael." And she shook her head, "Yeah." So I said, "What do I do with them? What am I supposed to do with them? Such a highly inappropriate gift." She said, "How about a Halloween costume?" And I got really excited. I sensed here a satisfying personal challenge, because when I was pregnant with my oldest son, while I was in seminary myself, I couldn't really afford maternity or baby clothes. So I went to the thrift store out of necessity. But what had started as a necessity soon became a hobby, and some might say an outright obsession. So I hopped into my car and headed over with purpose and focus to the Salvation Army store on Solano Avenue in Albany, California. And I opened the door just like you'd open the lid of a treasure chest and looked inside. With those black fishnet stockings in my head, I saw this close-fitting, knit, bright red dress with a plunging neckline. Yep, and then I went to the sweaters, and there I found a vest, fake fur white. Just the right way that would show off my décolletage. And then two turns around the shoes, and I found a strappy pair of fake patent leather shoes with rhinestones on them. I took my treasures to the counter, but there wasn't very good jewelry, so I hopped back in my car, went to Woolworths, and found a necklace that sort of nestled in between my breasts. You know, it sort of looked like those beads that they throw out at the Mardi Gras, only they were all strung together very nicely. And then I got some very long, dangly earrings that just brushed my shoulders a little bit. And then I thought, what about makeup? Makeup. So I went down the makeup aisle and I found fake eyelashes, fake nails, glittery eyeshadow, and a lipstick called Scarlet Scared. The first thing I did when I got home was I shortened that dress. So it was about mid-thigh, so you could really see those black fishnet stockings. And on Halloween, Sharon came over. And she took my hair and put it up on my head and sprayed it so it would stay up there. She helped me put on the false eyelashes and the fake nails, and I put on tons of makeup, eyeliner, eyeshadow, and the Scarlet Scare lipstick. And I was just ready to leave when she pulled out of her own bag a garish hobo bag. Multicolored, that she said was just the thing that I needed to complete my ensemble. I got in my car and drove to the first man's house. You knew this was coming. I pulled up to the curb, and his son was in the driveway. Now, his son was a friend of my own son's, but when I walked up to him, he didn't recognize me at all. And when I said my name, his eyes narrowed and then they widened. Soon his father came out, probably wondering why I was with this shady woman was with his very innocent son. And I turned to him and I said, "Trick or treat, Michael." And when I spoke, he finally recognized me. And he got this look of stunned disbelief. And there was speechless, just quiet. And then about 30 seconds later, kind of a shaky, nervous laughter. And he said, "Be sure to go see Mark." So I got in my car and I drove to the next man's house. And by then, some of the lights were out in his house. Because it was late, they were already getting ready for bed. So I knocked on the door, and then I rang the doorbell, and Mark came to the door, and I said, "Trick or treat," and he didn't recognize me. And he was just gonna close the door on me when I said, "It's Helen." And again, this amazed look of stunned disbelief. "This can't be you." But he insisted I come in so that I could present myself to his wife, Marcia. And she looked at me and kind of put her hands on her face with this kind of horrified look, and then she started to laugh. And she said, "Well, I want a picture." So we took a picture. And I stayed only for a few minutes, got into my car, and went back home. As soon as I got home, I realized that this had been much more than a Halloween costume. It had been an outright power play. In that church community, over the next years, there were lots of sexual innuendos and not a little bit of sexual shenanigans among, and often those two men were involved. But I was untouchable. I was inviolable during those years because I had beaten the big guys at their own silly, condescending, sexist prank. I had beat them at their own suggestive game. Trick or treat.
That was Helen Sepero, and you're listening to Arctic Entries on KSK Anchorage.
This hour, we hear Alaskans tell 7-minute true stories. You may have noticed the timer by now. At 5 minutes, we give our Arctic Entries storytellers a warning. and then another timer sounds at 7 minutes to let them know that it's time to tie things up.
Now with the break from stories, we'd like to feature local musicians Stephen Bacon and Kendra Kinsey. Since they performed live at Arctic Entries, they moved to Tennessee to pursue their music. Here they play original music with melody and meaning, girl-guy harmonies, and an acoustic finger-picking alternative bluegrassy old-time country folk flat-picking trad revival vibe.
That's a lot of adjectives.
So I'm Stephen Bacon. This is Kendra Kinsey, StephenandKendra.com. All these songs are original. They're all stuff that we wrote. They're based off of true experiences. If I could love like Jesus Christ, I'd wear my heart out in just one night. If I could weep like Mary wept down at the cross, I'd pay my debt. If I could tower now like the pines, I reach out for the red sunshine. Yeah, I kick my heels out like a chorus line. Give me love, love, love one more time. I gave up, I still have hope, till I look down from my tightrope. No safety net, no, just a broken crown. There's a rocky slope I tumble down. If I could tower now like the pines, I reach out for the red sunshine. Yeah, I kick my heels out like a chorus line. Give me love, love, love one more time. I've been so high, I stood so tall. I've been dropped like a cannonball, burning fists through paper walls. Red light wrist for wake up calls. If I could tower now like the pine, I'd reach out for sunshine. Yeah, the broken heart's down at the fight and die. Sing, give me love, love, love one more time.
Thank you, Stephen and Kendra. We just heard a live recording from the October 2011 Arctic Entries event.
Each month, our storyboard works with 7 Alaskans to help them shape their stories so they can share them at our live event the second Tuesday of each month. And, as you just heard, the stories are punctuated by local music.
Next, we'll hear a story from Anthony Fleets. Anthony first told this story of supernatural proportions live at the Snow Goose Theater in Anchorage. Here's Anthony.
Hello. When I tell this story, I still get a little bit nervous, Yeah, it was a very scary experience. It was the winter of 08, and I was taking classes at the university here at UAA, and I was living in the Mac apartments. Those of you that aren't familiar with the Mac apartments, there's an upstairs. Mine had a downstairs and an upstairs, and in the upstairs there were four individual bedrooms and one person in each bedroom. And just like every night, I'm in my room, I'm by myself, and the doors, when they close, they lock. And the only way you can get inside the room is with a key that's like a credit card. You know, you slide it in, and you can't pick the lock, you know, like, you know, I remember my brother would run into the room and scare me by picking the lock when I was a kid, but you can't do that here. And it's just like every night, I'm laying there, and all of a sudden I wake up, and that's out of the ordinary. And I'm like, I'm awake, and I lean over, I grab my phone, I look at the time, and it's 1:57 in the morning. And I think, why am I up right now? I don't have to pee, I'm not hungry, what's the deal? And as soon as these thoughts went through my mind, I felt this. You ever like had your hands close to your face, and you're not necessarily touching you, but you can feel that presence close to you. And I felt that presence around my neck, and never had anything like this happen to me before. And as an EMT, I'm thinking, okay, medically, what's going on? Like, why? What is this? You know? And I quickly processed and quickly realized that though I don't pray often, like I should pray for some reason right now. Like, this isn't normal. And the first word of my prayer was God. I said this prayer out loud, and I said, God. And as soon as I said that, this thing around my neck clamped down on my neck, and I couldn't breathe. And the scary thing was, I could immediately feel 10 individual fingers clamp around my neck. Oh my God. I was freaking out. I can't breathe. I can't get up. I'm like, what is going on right now? I start banging on the wall to my roommate who's right beside me. Banging on the wall, and I don't think it went on too long. I can't really tell you how long it did go on, but it stopped. And when it stopped, I shot out of bed and ran out of my room, and I'm looking around. It's like 2-something in the morning. No one's awake, right? And I'm like sweating. I'm like, what in the world just happened? And just like so many traumatic things in our lives, you know, I talk myself out of it. I'm like, that didn't happen. No. And almost maybe to prove it to myself, I finally talked myself into going back into the room, and I did that, and I went to bed, and things were fine, and I woke up the next morning, and nothing happened for a long time. And I've always been the kind of guy that if I believe in a ghost, I want it to walk up to me in Pilates or something at 3 p.m. and swat my coffee out of my hands or something, you know? I want there to be witnesses, you know? So this, I was like, yeah, that didn't happen. So now here we are, now it's the spring of 2011, and I'm sleeping, and this was a distinct difference. This was, I almost consider it sleep paralysis. Some of you may be familiar with that. When you wake up and your mind is awake and your body's awake, one of them's awake and the other one's not, right? And so I'm in this state. No big deal, all right? I'm like, okay, I just need to wake up here in a little bit. And all of a sudden, I felt this evil, evil presence around. Like, I'm scared. Like, I have nothing to be afraid about. I'm in my own home. And then I have this image in my head, and it's a nightmare. But I'm awake. Like, I'm aware of the things around me, right? And I'm in this room. There's this orange 1970s couch here with this old TV in front of it. There's someone on the couch, and I don't know who that is. The room is like cement cinder blocks, like tinted green and black, and they're creating this like half dome shaped roof, and it's dark on this side, and it's well lit just as it is here on this side. It's kind of creepy. On this side, and all of a sudden I was reminded of that same energy, that same presence in 2008. I don't know if I said this out loud. Again, I'm in this weird state. I said, why do you attack me at night?
Oh, wow.
And I said, why do you attack me at night? And I can't tell you that for a fact this response was whispered into my ear, but I know that my mind processed this response as if someone was speaking it to me. And it's very distinct and very obvious. And as soon as they said it, I woke up immediately and was terrified, wondering if I need to wake up my roommate, like, what is going on? Like, the response said, because you're less distracted and you're vulnerable. And I was like, that makes so much sense. Like, you know, at night when we're by ourselves, there's less distractions from the world, and maybe we're more in tune to what's going on and whatever that is. And so I've never had night terrors or nightmares, and pretty pleasant life. And not, other than those two experiences, nothing has really happened. And so that's the end of the story. And I try to relate it to going back to the night of 08 when that happened. I think, what happened in my life that could have changed that? I didn't drink a six-pack before I went to bed, and there was no diet changes or anything like that. And the only thing that changed, and I don't know if this is what happened, but I went on this trip to Red Shirt Lake, and we were looking for firewood, and the only available firewood that we could find was a spruce tree that was perched on this cabin that was just abandoned and, done. Like, one wall was missing, a roof was missing, there were some items left in the cabin. And so we chopped up the spruce tree for firewood. And that was the only thing that I could think of, why, what could have happened. And so I've always wondered if it was a response from that cabin. And so it seems like I'm out of time, but thanks for listening.
That was Anthony Fleets on Arctic Entries. And now, I'm a little scared of ghosts.
On this episode of Arctic Entries, our theme is spooked. We're hearing campfire stories, local legends, and tales of costumes gone amok.
Next, we'll hear a story from Ryan Scriver about the strangest, spookiest, and scariest few days of his life.
Thanks. When Emily asked me to come speak tonight and on the theme of spooked, I didn't know exactly what to say at first until I realized that I've actually got a pretty good story about the summer of my life turning into one of the scariest summers of my life. Just this last summer, I was having, everything was going perfectly. I had the girl of my dreams. She was beautiful, smart, and sexy. She's in the crowd tonight, Shayna. Maybe raise your hand, give people a little hello. So in addition to being super funny, smart, and sexy, she's also got this side of her that not everybody knows about, but I find really attractive, and it's this kind of badass side to her. She's got some tattoos and ex-military. She knows how to throw a punch, which I know because one time I got a little handsy at a wedding and she punched me in the face. So she knows what she's doing out there. And it's important for the story because we were just having the time of our life last summer. We were swimming in all the beautiful Wisconsin lakes. We had some friends with a boat. There was this rope swing on some land in western Wisconsin. Everything's going perfectly until one day at work, I start getting this just massive, massive, massive headache. And I'm thinking to myself, man, did I get overserved last night? Did somebody give me skunky high life or something? How did this go down? But pretty soon it becomes apparent this is no ordinary hangover. This is something serious, and I got to go home. So I head home, and the headache just keeps getting worse and worse and worse until the point where it's really difficult to even open my eyes and deal with the light. Shayna keeps telling me that I'm just being a wuss and that I need to suck it up, but it just keeps getting worse until the point where I'm blowing chunks, which is like one of the worst things that you can do when you've got a really, really bad headache, until stuff's just getting worse and worse and worse. You can imagine where it goes from there. Finally, I decide I need to go to the walk-in clinic, and they look at me and they're like, "Ah, there's nothing wrong with you." They agree with Shayna. They give me some ibuprofen, which I wanted to tell them to ingest, and I don't mean orally, because I was really sick, and so I kind of moped my way home, and a little bit of time goes on. It's the next day, and I'm getting sicker and sicker, and my muscles are all cramping up and getting sore, and all of a sudden, my mother's voice is echoing through my head. Any time I'd been sick since the day I left for college, my mother was there on the phone. You gotta get meningitis. You gotta go to the doctor. It's serious. You know, you can die from meningitis. Like, oh, crap. Like, I've actually got meningitis. So I go to the walk-in clinic again, and these quacks that had sent me home the day before finally realize that I'm actually really freaking sick, and so they're like, you need to go to the emergency room. I drive my way across town, go to the emergency room. They give me some kind of intense painkillers and some stomach-soothing stuff. Shayna's down at a wedding with her friends, still telling everybody I'm just being a wuss and backing out of this wedding. I try to make the drive down there, get to the wedding. Turns out I'm actually really, really sick again. And so immediately drive back, go to the emergency room. And I mean, I can barely open my eyes at this point. And they realize, wow, this dude's really, really sick. So they check me into the hospital. And that's where things started to get scary. Almost instantly, they start talking to me about things like lymphoma and cancer. And the concern in these doctors' eyes is very, very real and very, very scary to me, because for the first time, I don't just have the flu or a really bad three-day hangover. I've got something serious. But they don't know what's wrong with me, and that's what's perplexing all the doctors. And they start ordering all kinds of crazy tests, and including a spinal tap. And I go into the spinal tap room, and Shayna finally realizes I'm not faking. So she comes with me and does the very brave thing of offering to hold my hand. And so right as they're injecting me, into the spinal cord with a needle, I hear the second of the two doctors start saying, ma'am, you need to sit down. Ma'am, you need to sit down. And I feel her hand loosening on mine, and I realize, shit, she's fainting right now. Like, my Iraq veteran girlfriend is fainting at the sight of a needle. And I've got one in my spine. This is awful. So sure enough, one of the doctors runs around and catches her as she falls. And right as he catches her, she kind of like starts to come to and instantly throws her fists up like 1930s style boxing. Like she's going to clean this doctor's clock. And I'm thinking, oh, man, we're never going to be able to afford these medical bills. LPS, can you get this needle out of my spine? And so eventually they do. And she took all the attention that day. But the attention pretty quickly focused back in on me and the fact that I was getting worse. And they still had no idea what was wrong with me. They brought in infectious disease specialists from Mayo Health Clinic and from Chicago, and it was like an episode of House. I found out later that I was known throughout the hospital as Patient X, that they were having briefings on me, trying to figure out what the hell was wrong with me. You know, I already knew that things were bad, and I was feeling like I was on my deathbed. But one time I tried to get up and go to the bathroom while the doctors were in the room, and the doctor physically pushed me back and said, Ryan, you are extremely sick. We have no idea what's wrong with you, and I want to be clear, you could be dying. Sit down. Okay. Newsflash. Not going to tell my mom or Shane about that one, but here we go. And so it was very, very real to me until finally, all of a sudden, after days and days of questioning from these infectious disease specialists, one of them comes running into the hospital room and says, oh my God, I know what's wrong with you. And I'm like, really? What? He says, leptospirosis. What the hell is leptospirosis? And he's like, well, you haven't heard of it because it's normally a disease that only canines get. What? I've got a dog-based illness? Like, that's the scariest thing I've ever heard. I'm spooked now. And he says, well, not exactly. And he starts asking me more questions right away. And he says, have you been swimming at all? And I said, yeah, for sure. I've been in all these lakes, and lifts them all off. And he said, any of them near farms? And I said, yeah. What do I need to know here, doc? He says, well, leptospirosis is actually carried by the urine of bovines. Wait, I have a bovine-based cow pee illness that only dogs can get? And I've been in the hospital for a week trying to deal with this thing? That is the scariest thing that you can possibly encounter.
That was Patient X, known in Anchorage as Ryan Scriver.
Luckily, Ryan survived his illness and told his story at the Snow Goose Theater in October 2011.
You're listening to Arctic Entries? Visit our website at arcticentries.com.
And now, our final storyteller, Amanda Smith, tells about an encounter with mortality in Alaska's backcountry.
in the thinking of whether or not I was going to tell this story, I had to talk with myself a little bit, and I realized that it's in the telling and hearing of each other's stories that keeps us alive. So that's why I am willing and excited to give you one small glimpse, 7-minute glimpse into what was about a 24-hour period for me. So it was an absolutely beautiful day, the kind of day that doesn't come along very often, and I was on a 3-day trek, and I was coming up this one side of a glacier that was south-facing, freeze-thaw, 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 with little rivulets running on the top, and then there was a pass on the glacier, and I crossed over the pass, and it was evident, this east-facing side, that there was, about 3 days before, it had snowed, and there was a few inches of snow, and I'm as happy as can be glissading down this glacier, and right as I look to my left and I see these crazy cracks connected to the moraine, I realized I shouldn't be on this glacier, and bam, I fell and I hit my chin hard against the other side of the crevasse, and I fell hard, ragdolling down, hitting, banging about 35 feet down into this crevasse, and as I'm falling, I think to myself, I'm falling in a crevasse. This is what it's like to fall in a crevasse. And bam, I land on the last snow bridge in this dark, icy chute. And right ahead of me, so I'm lying face down, and right ahead of me is my hat, like 6 feet, like my favorite hat, and my trekking pole, which is the only sharp object I have in this cave of ice, and the wall of the crevasse is right to my right, and I think to myself, like, oh, I like systems check, am I okay? I'm okay, you're okay. Oh my gosh, you're in this crevasse, and I look down and my fingernails have all been ripped off from trying to grab on as I was falling, and I go to push myself up, and whoomp, my hand goes right through this snow bridge, and I realize at that moment that there are 100 different types of ice and snow. There is really soft, crystally, poofy snow, and there is hard blue ice, and there's brittle ice, and slick ice, and soft ice, and everything in between. And so I have to get off this snow bridge that I'm on. My pack's all askew, and right to my left, there's about an 8-foot bridge, and I climb, plunging my hands into this bridge, and I get on to this next ledge, and it's on this ledge that I can be for a long time. And so I'm on this ledge, and I take out my sleeping pad, and I put on pants. I had been wearing shorts, and I put on my down jacket and my hat, and I put on rain pants and a rain jacket, and here I can be for a while. And I think to myself, okay, this is the first day on your trip. Someone's not going to recognize you're gone for 3 more days, maybe 4 more days, and then your car will be there, and they're not going to be alarmed for 5 more days, and then it will take at least one solid day to get to where you are. Okay, I can live on this bench for that long. And then I think to myself that there are other people. I thought of Colby Coombs, who had broken 2 vertebrae and down climbed for 2 days in the winter to get back to help. And I thought of Aaron Ralston, who had been stuck between a rock and a hard place and cut his arm off for help. And I thought of my great friend Anne, who had been buried in an avalanche in January. And I thought, if they can do that, I can do this. And so then I take my pack off, and I eat a little bit of a Snickers bar with what was a really mangled jaw, and I drink some water, and I plan my escape, and my in-hole is here, and my out-hole is here, and there's one other crack of light above me, and I take the edible food out of my pack and put it in my pockets. I take my headlamp out and put it in my pockets, because I now have 2 goals. One is to not let anything fall on top of me, and the other is for me to not fall further. And so I have
what I need on me, and I can't climb with my pack on because it weighs me down just a little, and I can't not have my pack if I fall further because it has a sleeping pad which would insulate me from this ice and a stove and a few other things. And so I take my tent fly and I tie it to my pack, and there's a ledge right beside me. This whole crevasse is made of chutes and disconnected ladders and big dark holes, and I have my pack, and I realize if I can get it to that ledge, I can climb up and meet it and then climb in. So I put the guy line of my tent in my mouth, the tent fly, which is tied to my pack, and I throw it up to the next ledge, and it falls, and I reel it back in, and I throw it up, and it falls, and this was not very far, and I wonder, that's weird, and I didn't know that I had dislocated all five ribs and twisted a couple vertebrae and didn't have much strength in that arm. So finally, I get low on my knees and throw it up, and it stays, and the guy line's in my mouth, and now it's time to climb. I've been here for about 3 or 4 hours now. And so I have this space, this span of space to get across, and this brittle, sharp ice, and I have to get through underneath. And so there is an icicle here, and I remember my friend Scotty once saying to me, of all strange things, he's a climber, ice is strong, it'll hold you, ice is strong. So I grab that icicle, I have my leg up, and basically after testing and trying 100 times, I go for the leap of faith, and I climb, and I'm bashing icicles away from me, and I let the guy line out of my mouth come out around, and now I'm with my pack, and there's this hard ice ladder, bridge, thing, slick as all get out, and so I take my tent stakes and I start chiseling, because you have all the time in the world to get it right and no chances for getting it wrong. And so I chiseled out one foothold, and I could stand up a little higher and hold onto that. It took me about an hour, by the way. And then I chiseled out a second foothold, and then I put the guy line of my tent slash attached to my pack in my mouth, and I climbed, and I made it up to the next bridge, and then I'm just like 6 feet from the top, and then the opening of the crevasse is narrowing, and here the snow is like the kind of snow like when you're a child and you're building a fort. And so I'm down on my knees, and I pull the snow and I pack it down, and I pull the snow and I pack it down, I pull the snow and I pack it down, and finally I have a stool that's like 3 feet higher, and I step up onto my stool, and now the crevasse is getting narrower and I'm getting really close, and I make a snowball and I smack it against one side of the crevasse, and I pack it in, and I pack it in, and I pack it in, and then I can use that as a foothold and chimney myself out, and I rolled out the very end of this beautiful day, and I think, oh, I can keep going on my trip. Until I looked around and realized that I was still on the glacier, and I had to get off of the glacier, and now I see crevasses everywhere. And so I take my tent poles and I use them as probes, and I get to the moraine. And it was when I was at the moraine, I had an 18-mile hike out. And so I had to take off my down jacket, and I had to be ready for what was next. And I had been so rational and calm that I'm getting ready for my hike out. And that is when I scream.
Thanks for tuning in to this hour of Arctic Entries. To hear these stories again or to share them with friends, arcticentries.com. We also have information and themes for our upcoming live shows the second Tuesday of each month, and details on how you too could tell a story.
Before we close, one more song from Stephen Bacon and Kendra Kinsey.
Thank you. We're going to do one more song for you guys. So Kendra and I are going to be moving to Nashville in January, we just decided. We're selling all of our stuff. If you need recording gear or anything like that, just talk to me. We're going to have a CD release somewhere, probably here in I think like the first week of January, then we'll go to Nashville. So if you're on the email list, we'll send you guys a thing about that. This is a sing-along. It's a happy song. You guys don't have to sing along, but you could. The chorus is, got food on the table, food on the table, got food on the table, milk in the fridge, life is good. A song about being thankful. Got food on the table,
got food on the table, got food on the table, milk and fridge,
life is good. Got food on the table,
got food on the table, got food on the table, milk in the fridge,
life is good. Got a car and it runs,
got a car and it runs, I got a car and it runs and it blows hot air.
Life is good, it's gonna be for sale in January. Got a bed and a sheet.
Got a bed and a sheet. Got a bed and a sheet, gonna rest our feet.
Life is good, got food on the table.
Got food on the table. You got food on the table, milk in the fridge.
Life is good, got food on the table.
You got food on the table. You got food on the table, milk in the fridge.
Life is good. Hey, I heard people singing, yes. We're gonna have to come here and tell a story about no one sang next Halloween, but now we don't have to.
Got a straight job again. I got a straight job again. I got a straight job again. I'm a worried man.
Life is good. Got music and friends.
I got music and friends. I got music, friends, and a sweet melody.
Life is good. Got food on the table.
Got food on the table. Got food on the table. Milk in the fridge. Life is good.
Found peace through the pain.
Found peace through the pain. Found peace through the pain. The lesson is love.
Life is good. Got all that I need.
Got all that I need. Won't lose my soul to gain the world.
Life is good. Got food on the table.
We'd like to thank our storyboard, the storytellers for this show, and our musical guests, Stephen Bacon and Kendra Kinsey. All of the proceeds from our shows are donated to a local social services nonprofit. Information about this is also on our website. And a special thanks to Anchorage's own Super Saturated Sugar Strings for our theme music.
This has been Arctic Entries on KSK Anchorage. I'm Rosie Robards.
And I'm Jason Brandeis. Thanks for listening, and we look forward to hearing your stories.